The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and we are set to begin the 13th season of BPIB, and a season unlike any of the previous 12 for the St. Louis Cardinals. To talk about the top 10 questions facing the Cardinals as they begin spring training in 2025, and we begin the 13th season of BPIB, I have brought together the Post-Dispatch Bureau here in Jupiter, Florida. That is, of course, Benjamin Hockman and Daniel Guerrero. You'll hear from them shortly as we sort through the questions facing the Cardinals. Cue the music.
The best fans in baseball deserve the best podcast in baseball. It's BPIB. Here's your host, Derek Gould.
Benjamin has something you really want to say.
Well, I just don't know what facade you're trying to put on here. You said the Bureau, so, and obviously I'm ruining it if you had it. A lot of the people are like, oh, they must have this, like, this Bureau with press hats with the fedoras and the press in it, and they're working hard. We're just at this condo we're renting right now, sitting at a table.
Right, no, but this is the Post-Dispatch Treasure Coast Bureau.
Treasure Coast Bureau? Okay.
Does that sound good?
It does, but it just sounds too big, too fancy.
All right. So we are at a table near the kitchen of our rental home, and I'm sitting here with...
And over there's the peanut butter and jelly I just used to make the sandwich tonight, and there's a couple empty Aquafina bottles, and here's Daniel.
I'm just trying to figure out when we're going to get the hats.
Oh, the fedoras?
That would be cool.
That would be cool. Would that be cool, Derek, to show up one day to the Busch Stadium press box with the hats from the...
I wore one at Wrigley Field. I had a fedora and a little tag that we made, and we popped in at press.
Was it to, like, were you in a Justin Timberlake early 2000s phase?
I was at Wrigley Field, and I had a fedora handy.
Cool.
And I was like, no, I'm gonna wear this up. I'm gonna cover it like the last time they won a World Series in 2016, I guess it was. Now, but this is pre 2016. Still 2016, man, long time ago.
Yeah, remember that dynasty they were supposed to have?
Yeah. You know what's longer?
What's that, buddy?
2011.
Oh, I see what you're doing.
That is Post-Dispatch sports columnist Benjamin Hockman. Of course, earlier you heard from Daniel Guerrero, baseball writer at the Post-Dispatch. The three of us have reported to spring training. Pitchers and catchers, quote-unquote, reported earlier today. We'll do the rest of it. We'll handle the reporting from here. Gentlemen, let's jump right into it. This is an annual start to BPIB, an annual start to the podcast when it comes to spring training. We look at the 10 questions that I asked in the paper, and I would really like to get your thoughts on them. So we'll just go through them, all right? Number one, what's the fallout from the Nolan Arenado trade talks? To date, as we're recording this, that's me checking my phone.
To make sure he wasn't traded?
Yeah. He has not been traded. Where things stand are a lot of where they've stood for weeks, which is, where does Alex Bregman go? Alex Bregman has, according to people I've talked to, sources who are aware of the situation, has an offer from the Boston Red Sox that is a short-term, high-dollar, bounce-back, somewhat similar to like what a Cody Bellinger first did with the Cubs to give people some traction there, or some idea of what he's dealing with there. If he wants that, or if he wants a longer-term deal, then there's Detroit. The Cubs are in the mix. You know, is he trying to go through this to pull Houston back into it? Because their general manager, who we'll get a chance to talk to, but he certainly spoke about Alex Bregman in the past tense here recently with reporters in Houston. So all of this is hung up, because if he ends up going to Boston on the short-term deal, that could likely leave Nolan Arenado as a Cardinal until some team either during spring training or during the season wants him. But if Bregman jumps to the Cubs and decides to take on the Cardinals for the next few years, then it could mean that Nolan Arenado heads to Boston. What's the fallout from all this? Like, what does it mean if he leaves, Benjamin? What does it mean if he stays?
Well, if he stays, it's just super weird, first of all. Because really what matters to the St. Louis Cardinals are the 500 at-bats that he would take in 2025. Now, I'm not saying other things don't matter to the St. Louis Cardinals, but the whole point of this weird 2025 season is to give guys, to use the word that Marmol and others have used, a long runway. They're not going to – no one's going to Memphis this year. They're just going to swing through their slumps, whether it's Jordan Walker or Nolan Gorman, who they want to play third base, but there's another Nolan currently in the way. So, yeah, it's about these precious 500 at-bats, if you will, and who's going to take them. And they could really, really help Nolan Gorman. Now, he'll probably get them anyway, but that would be at second base. That means somebody else doesn't get at-bats because Donovan's then in the outfield. And so somebody won't be getting 500 at-bats if Nolan Arenado's still around.
Daniel, do you think it's all that big a deal as far as the Cardinals go if it's Gorman at second, as Benjamin talks about, Donovan in left? That means Newt Barr's in center and Michael Ciani or Victor Scott isn't. How do you think that sets up for the team, not only in what they want to accomplish by getting young players playing time, but how good they are?
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to look at this, and I think in general, I mean, with the whole reset, the word they're using, right? They're not calling it a rebuild. It's more of the reset, hitting the reset button on the organization. I think a big part of it is really with the minor league system and the overhaul going on there. But when you look at the major league impact and you look at some of the moving parts that have to happen for the reset at the major league level to really take place, Nolan Arenado getting traded or not getting traded, I think does have a huge impact on that. Like you said, there is that trickle-down effect of, okay, well, if Nolan Arenado is still manning third base, then Nolan Gorman is at second, Donovan's in left. You have, like, as you kind of mapped it out of what could happen. When it comes to the winning aspect and kind of the expectations that are there, I would say that I think in a bigger scope, it could delay kind of what the Cardinals' goal is in terms of developing players to win at the major league level. Because those are at-bats and those are opportunities that he would be taking that guys aren't going to have to progress in the majors. And I think when you're kind of going from saying, like, okay, certain guys like Thomas Ajayi, for example, is going to get runway to be this utility infielder that's going to be playing around the diamond, you know, when, you know, Donovan's going to be at second and Gorman at third and Sajayi's just going to swing his way into the lineup every day or whatever it may be, that progress, in my opinion, is a little bit slowed because these at-bats are being taken up by Nolan Arenado, and that progress for him to be a productive major leaguer and for other guys to also get enough reps to play at that level and succeed at that level is all, I think, in a sense, just slowed. And, you know, it's kind of like, it's kind of capped in what they can do and what they are going to be able to do later down the road.
Well, one thing to throw out there for the listeners and for us is part of the conversation is, are the Cardinals actually a worse offensive team with Nolan Arenado playing third base? 719 OPS last year. He turned into a singles hitter. Now, I think he's going to bounce back. Benjamin, think he's going to bounce back. We all spoke to him, including myself, a couple times that last week of the last homestand of the year, and just listening to his honesty and his confidence about becoming a pull slugger again, he thinks he could do it. But if you got a guy that's he was a 101 OPS plus last year. If you got 101 OPS plus at third base this coming year, I mean, does that necessarily make you that much better of a team if you're actually trying to win baseball games? And, oh, by the way, the aforementioned 500 at-bats won't be going to Victor Scott or Michael Ciani.
So that's a great way to put it, that it won't be going to the outfielders, right? So when you're 101 OPS plus, right, at third base, it's really more of like a 101 OPS plus from two guys who are more defensive mindset in center field.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Which brings me to the little sidebar question I want to ask you before we move on to question number two. And this is just a simple yes or no for you guys. Are the Cardinals a better team in 2025 with Nolan Arenado at third base and in the lineup versus not?
Are you talking about the record of the team?
Are they a better team? Yes, correct. The record of the team. Are they higher in the standings in 2025
sure.
with Nolan Arenado at third base? Yes or not?
I want to say yes, but not by much if he wasn't on the team. But like I said, I do think he's going to bounce back this year for whatever team he's on.
Yes. So your yes or no answer is yes?
It is yes, but I'm not saying they're a 100-win team. I'm saying maybe they're an
80-win team.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if you're looking at Nolan Arenado bouncing back, and I mean, he has the track record of being successful to major leagues. I mean, there's no question about that. But I think, yeah, I mean, if that is a Nolan Arenado you're going to get that we've seen over a decade in Major League Baseball, then, yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that Cardinals could be a better team with him in the lineup, assuming he goes back to being Nolan Arenado.
All right, then follow up yes or no question. Are the Cardinals a better team in 2026 with Nolan at third base in 2025?
No, because, I mean, the whole point of Nolan Arenado not being on the Cardinals is someone is going to hopefully in a positive way, grow as a player, mm-hmm. and of course that player would be better in 2026. Or if it's a Ciani, I'm jumping ahead here, but if it's Ciani and Scott and they both get good and you have to trade one of them, then okay, maybe you get a better player for him from a value standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I just to kind of piggyback off what Benjamin started off with saying of like, if the reset is to give guys enough at-bats and playing time at the major league level to be successful major leaguers down the road. I mean, sure, you can get tons of at-bats in Memphis, but if the point of the reset is to have the young core have every opportunity in the majors to then succeed later down the road and have that establish, you know, this kind of culture of reestablish, I guess, this culture of winning, then, yeah, I mean, I think not having Nolan Arenado in 2026 or not having him in 2025 then affects 2026, and that is kind of what you would – I guess what I think a lot of people were expecting to see of this reset of, you know, this Cardinals resetting back into contention with the young core.
And real quick, I know we have 9 more questions we're going to jump into, but
some of them are quick. Don't promise.
Okay.
All right, I promise.
Thank you.
To be fair, I did ask yes or no questions, and we've gone on for 3 minutes here.
I said yes, and then I had another minute and a half of it.
I feel like yeah. I needed a little bit of
it wasn't a yes, comma, but. It was a yes, comma, and here's my explanation.
It was improv yes, and. It was total improv, groundlings, the usual. We're just off to a roaring start in season 13, as I can't even keep the guests to yes, no answers.
The other thing I was going to bring up is...
Oh, boy. The other thing.
Yeah. And this will just take 37 minutes. Just the thought about the clubhouse aspect. And Arenado, of course, is a good dude. He's a very emotional guy you hear from within the clubhouse. And I'm not saying the Cardinals are better off with him out of the clubhouse. But what I'm saying is if you're trying to create a culture where the leaders are these 20-something guys, especially from an offensive standpoint, because we know we've got Sonny Gray coming back. And yes, I'm acknowledging Wilson Contreras is coming back. But Arenado is a big personality, and he's friends with a lot of the guys like Newt Barr. If he's not in the clubhouse, suddenly the Newt Barrs of the world, the Donovans of the world, Burlesons, whomever, can become even bigger presences.
I ask this rhetorically, so no need to respond, but do they? Like, do they? Because, like, if Arenado leaves, you know, who will miss him? is Lars Nootbaar. Sure. If Arenado leaves, you know who will have probably an everyday position, but also kind of wonder like, oh man, what direction are we going? Brendan Donovan. So I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know if his departure is that. And I have said before on the podcast that I think a team that adopts Nolan Arenado's personality would actually be a pretty good team. True. But a team that expects Nolan Arenado to lead them to that personality, that's one that's not fair. Like, you don't all of a sudden become a different person with a larger contract. You get the larger contract because of who you've been and the production to follow. So, yeah. I mean, that fiery personality, I think, benefits a team if it embraces it. But if a team turns to it to say, hey, can you guide us? No. Inspire us? Yes. Right. Guide us? No. Those are different things.
Yeah, if we're doing this, though, the other part of it is if Arenado's on the Cardinals, and I hope I'm making it clear that I like Arenado and I do have faith that he's going to bounce back. But what I'm saying is if he is on the St. Louis Cardinals in 2025, that means he was not traded to a destination he wanted to go to. He's playing for a team that is probably not going to make the playoffs, may not even be .500. How does a fiery, hungry guy who's not been in the World Series, heck, has even been in the NLDS?
Yeah.
One year in the
– Yes, he has been.
But one time, never the
same. He has more playoff wins with the Rockies than he does at this point. Than
those are wild card games, if I remember.
When he got to the DS, but yeah.
He's never been in the NLCS, let alone the World Series. And here's a guy who's getting older, wants to do it, and now it's July 19th, and the sun is shining in St. Louis. It's 101 degrees. He's playing third base in a game against the Pirates saying, what am I doing here?
Right. Well, he could be looking across the diamond at the Pirates and go, well, I'm not there.
Yeah.
But one of the things is it would be interesting because you would have a guy who for the fourth time – because he chose not to accept a trade that was finalized with Houston, you would have a guy who four times chose to be a Cardinal. Like, that's not even like a free agent. Like, you can't name a guy who four times. Like, Rob Kaminsky signed with the Cardinals. He was drafted once, returned. That's two times.
Like David Perron for the Blues. They just kept bringing him back.
But wasn't he traded at one point in time to the Blues? Like, twice.
Yeah, I think so one.
So what's that? I don't even know what the comp is. Like, Nolan Arenado wanted to be traded to the Cardinals, worked to make it happen, opted into staying with the Cardinals, rejected a trade to the Houston in a way that now leaves him with the Cardinals. I mean, it's just fascinating. So, all right. So question number two. We'll get through these. All right. Question number two.
Unless, podcast. There's no shot clock. You can go forever.
No. I'm sure listeners right now are hoping that we do, especially if they're stuck on 40, wondering like, all right, well, I got another hour of a commute here from, I guess, Big Ben to downtown. All right. Daniel, I turn to you and ask this question. This spring, will we get a sense on when the ETA is, speaking of commutes, when the ETA is on Generation Bloom?
Well, I guess it depends on what you're looking for in terms of the ETA. Like, are we speaking in terms of when are we going to actually see them? Or when are we going to see Generation Bloom in the majors? Or Generation Bloom...
Blooming.
Kind of bloom, yeah. Or when are we going to see Generation Bloom, I guess, kind of live up to what...
Contending again?
Right. Yeah. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. Couldn't find the right word.
You're good. Yeah, contending again. When is Generation Bloom going to make good on its promise to be what the Cardinals are expected to be?
I hate to go back to the question we just spent 2 hours on, but I still do think that is the Arenado, if there's an Arenado deal, that does have a factor, because Generation Bloom, in returning to contention and fulfilling that promise, could be affected by the limited reps that guys could have if you know, like Benjamin said earlier, if Nolan Arenado's taking 500 at-bats and it's here on July 19th playing for the St. Louis Cardinals. But I do think that it could come in waves, right? Because progress is not linear.
Yeah.
Not for a single prospect, and we've seen that, right, where We could probably use Mason Wynn as a good example, right? He arrives to the majors in 2023 and struggles and then blossoms in 2024. And if you're looking in terms of an entire generation of players, there are going to be ups and downs as a core. There's going to be ups and downs individually. And I would say that I think that you're going to see glimpses of it in 2025. I think we've seen some of the hitting side show up already. Some have, you know, taken some twists and turns in their development. I mean, Jordan Walker's one of them, and Nolan Gorman's another one. But I think when you look at the generation bloom and seeing, okay, like, this is the core that's going to help the Cardinals get to contention again, I think a big part of that's going to be on the pitching side, because that's what we haven't really seen in the last few years. And a big part is going to be on the starting pitching side. I mean, last year we saw Michael McGreevy. You know, he was really strong in his showing in the majors. We saw Gordon Graziffo kind of show up for a little bit. We did not see Sam Roberts show up at all. Tacoa Roby and Tim Kentz are now on the 40-man. And there's some, you know, some questions of durability as starters. And this will be big years for them to prove that. So I think at the major league level, it might be a little bit hard to kind of see that generation bloom actually show up. I think there will be major pieces of that you're going to see kind of blossom in the majors. I think there's going to be some at the upper minor league level, especially in Memphis on the pitching side, that is where they're going to have to make strides. And that's where you're going to kind of get this idea that, okay, these guys are going to be the ones that are going to help lead the Cardinals back to winning, or these are going to be the guys who are going to have to kind of shift their roles in the organization and roles as pitchers. If guys can't handle those workloads for starters, that you might start thinking like, okay, well, what are we really going to get out of him? But I mean, this is going to be a big year where I do think you're going to see some puzzle pieces fall together.
Regarding generation bloom, it's twofold in my eyes. First part of it is it starts on draft day. This is it summer. When is draft this year? July. When
All-Star break now.
All-Star break. When they have the fifth pick, when they start getting their own guys, drafting their own players, that's when the process begins.
So you think generation bloom is?
Well, I got twofold. I said it was twofold. Oh. The other, and I might be still being off with what you're about to ask, but just really quick, the other thing I was saying is the major league team, the St. Louis Cardinals, being good again. I think, and I know we've seen other teams with rebuilds where it takes half a decade to get going again. But I want to say from my chair here, assuming the Cardinals can be in the low 80s wins, I don't think they're going to get many more than that this year. It's on tape, so when they win 100, we'll be able to point a finger at me.
When they win 70.
Right, right. No, I know, and that's what I'm saying. I'm being optimistic thinking they'd be around 500. My point is Walker, Gorman, Nuke Barr, these guys – are going to be ready to go, hopefully, for a big 2026. I
mean, so that's the thing, right?
With the clean slate, he might have money to spend. We don't know sure. My point is that the final period I'm trying to put on this is that I want to think that Generation Bloom, in regards to the Major League team, is pushing for a playoff spot in 2026.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, generally, I get what you're saying, that like he inherits some players. But look, if the Cardinals don't have a core in the coming years that includes JJ Weatherholt, then like, look, they've already had a pick that didn't turn out that was their highest in more than a generation.
Yeah.
And that is generation bloom. And that could turn into generation blah if it's not. I mean, if that's what happens.
Yeah,
and I'm not putting it all on one guy.
Right.
But I'm saying like Chase Davis, J.J. Weatherholt, some of these other moves that they've made, Tacoa Roby, right? These are all players who were acquired with the notion that some of them, not all of them, but some of them would generate or create a core. Jordan Walker is a huge part of that, both in size and prominence and expectations. And Bloom didn't draft him. No. Bloom didn't develop him.
Right.
But Bloom is going to be the one who's in charge when they have to make the call whether or not that dude is who you build a lineup around. Sure. J.J. Weatherholt is a guy who you count on. Well, I mean, all that stuff, yeah.
That's what I said. There's twofold. The one side is the new players that they'll be drafting with their magic touch on them, and not to say they wouldn't have drafted Weatherholt, not to say they wouldn't have drafted somebody else, but the other part is the St. Louis Cardinals professional Major League Baseball team that Chaim Bloom did not bring any of these humans into the world, into the Major League world, but they are now his babies, if you will, because he's the boss. So that's why I was saying for twofold. I wasn't being like, oh, Weatherholt, no way he'll make it because Bloom didn't draft him. I'm just saying, like, once a GM and Cerfolio and Day and all these guys get to draft with their magic touch, like their algorithms, their way of looking at prospects and high school and college players, that will be when they put their fingerprints on that fold. But the other fold, of course, is the 26 men wearing the birds on the bat.
For the fifth pick overall, Randy Flores will still be in charge, and Cerfolio will still be over the development aspects. So, this will still be a Randy Flores show, and could still be afterwards. We don't know.
Yeah.
Bloom will have that choice. So, question
about that curveball. That's a pun intended, because Randy Flores was a pitcher.
Right.
Question three. This is an easy one. How much will defense be a deciding factor? The Cardinals are moving Wilson Contreras to first base. That he replaced Paul Goldschmidt, who was a big part of their defensive turnaround from a few years ago. That puts Ivan Herrera and Pedro Páez at catcher. What do they bring defensively at that position that's different than, say, what Wilson would have brought at that position? And how much should offense versus defense be a factor in center field? Because even if the Cardinals trade Nolan Arenado, gents, they could still make a call where Newt Barr's in center just to boost up that offense. So Thomas Tejasi would be in the lineup then more, or Gorman would be at DH and Alec Burleson would be out in the outfield, or all of those things, right? Those are all in play. So how much do you think defense should be a factor?
Well, I'm hemming and hawing here because, like, surely you want to take – I think it's more of a case-by-case situation, right? I mean, if we're just talking about
– So take us through. Let's just talk about center field. Let's focus for the sake of time, like, what – on center field, how do you make that choice?
Well, I mean, we know from looking at the advanced stats, like defensive run saves, that a healthy Ciani is a fringe, if not definite, gold glove finalist guy, right? Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, you have to take that into contention. And then, of course, I mean, that's what spring is for. You know, we see how they're doing offensively and the whole thing. So I think it's definitely going to be, as Marmol and his staff make the decision who gets the start in center field, they're going to definitely put defense in the conversation. Of course they would. I'm speaking the obvious. But, yeah, I just wonder, like, how good does Scott have to hit, or how poorly does Ciani have to struggle offensively for Scott to be the starter?
Well, let's talk about that, Daniel. Do you think Victor Scott can make that push? Victor Scott was the opening day center fielder a year ago due to the injury to Dylan Carlson. Did Victor Scott make some strides defensively, more so offensively, and really never got to show off that stolen base success, even at the Triple A level?
Right.
But, I mean, can Victor Scott make it interesting?
I think he can. I mean, and I go back to what Victor did to add that leg, that stride to his swing. And that's something that, okay, maybe you look at the box score and you're like, well, I mean, he did it, but he didn't really, you know, it's not like the numbers jumped off the page. Right. But, I mean, when you're adding that significant of a change to your swing mid-season, I do think that they're, for a guy that young, there probably is, you know, some patience to have, because, I mean, that's a significant change to make. But I think when you look at Victor Scott's track record in getting to the majors quickly, and what made him stand out is obviously that stolen base total. It's obviously the defense. But when you looked at the presence that he had at the top of the lineup at the major, at the minor league level, I mean, you saw a guy who, okay, like, he lets you dream of, okay, this could be a major league leadoff hitter, you know, for years to come. And I think he has the athleticism. I think he has the bats of all skills. And I think, and I know I've mentioned this before when it comes to prospects, but I think he has the, like, the makeup of what it takes to accept the highs and lows and be able to learn.
Good point.
And develop at the major league level, or to learn and develop at the minor league level if he's in Memphis and swings his way up to the majors. But I think there is the tool set, the physical ones that you see that, you know, talk about in prospect reports, and also the intangibles that I think could make Victor Scott a serious contender to compete for that opening day spot in center field.
Benjamin, you had a chance to talk with the new hitting coach, Brant Brown. That's the fourth question. There is a parallel universe somewhere where the Cardinals are not going through this at all, where they had just an average slugging percentage with runners in scoring position. I figured it out. What if they were just average and it would have been 40 more extra base hits with runners in scoring position? That would turn the tide of a lot of games. You're talking about a team that played so many close games and slugged so far. Now they hit fine. They were on base fine with runners in scoring position. They're all average. But they were so poor, near the bottom of the league, bottom of the National League, when it came to slugging, doing damage with runners in scoring position. In other words, creating a run. Like, you couldn't do anything but create at least a run in that spot with extra base hits. In your conversation with Brant Brown, do you have any sense for the question number four that we asked, which is, can a new coach perk up a pedestrian offense?
Yeah. I think he definitely can. I just spoke with Brant Brown today. It was just me and him. We had a great talk. He's got this great personality everyone talks about. And look, I was down on Turner Ward. But he was fiery too. He had a little person. I'm not saying that just because you're enthusiastic that means you're going to be successful. But when you look at Brant Brown, that's just part of his full thing, where he got a great enthusiasm, and he's a guru when it comes to hitting, and just the things he talks about in regards to messaging with the players. He goes, it's not about what I teach them; it's about making sure they're hearing what I teach them. Because otherwise, it's not going to come out on the field in a good way. And he talked a lot about what he's been doing with Jordan Walker's swing. And he talked a lot about what he's been doing with Nolan.
What are those things?
Yeah, that's in the paper tomorrow.
Well, this is coming out after the paper tomorrow. What are some things that they were working on?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember all the specifics. It's been a long day. But with Walker, he's saying that his swing is level, and he's working on that. I mean, obviously, we know that the main problem, one dude's grounding out too much, the other dude's striking out too much.
Right.
So how do you fix that? And he was describing the way Gorman attacks the ball. So there's definitely some confidence coming. And you all were there yesterday when we spoke to Mar Mull, and we asked him about Gorman, and he kind of like turned into a kid in a candy store, like kind of got all excited, and he was smiling because he was like, all right, let's talk about the excitement that is Nolan Gorman. To your point, yes, I think Brant Brown, he's my high school classmate. Shout out to Brant Brown, class of 98. But Brant Brown, I think...
Not class of 98.
Yeah, he's 53 years old. I really do believe that he will make these guys better hitters. And so, yes, he will have an impact.
Likely class of 90 somewhere. Daniel, question number five. This will be the first spring that we get to see Quinn Matthews in Major League camp. Right. Tink Hentz has been here before. Cooper Jerpy has been here before. But really, Quinn Matthews, the Baseball America Pitcher of the Year throughout all of the minor leagues. First guy in a long time to strike out 200 in a minor league season. First pitcher for the Cardinals since Rick Ankiel to strike out 200 in a minor league season. And yet, when you look at the rotation, all of them, four of the five, are 32 or older. The average age is 32. Andre Pallante is the one bringing that age down. Andre Pallante is really the new starter to the mix. Eric Fetty is new to the Cardinals in the mix. It really is a pretty big age gap when you talk about the 30-something rotation and the 20-something lineup. So, given that, given the experience in the rotation, and given that this is our first glimpse at Quinn Matthews, and another glimpse, an extended glimpse at Michael McGreevy, is there any room whatsoever for youth to pierce the season rotation?
I feel like like when you look at the projections and you think like, okay, who's going to be in the starting rotation? Who's going to break camp with the Cardinals? You know, the guys who are going to take the ball once every 5 days. And I think it is a little bit hard to see that because of the experience, because of obviously the guys like Sonny Gray and Eric Fedeu, you know, Miles Michaelis, the guys who have been in the major leagues for a long time, Steven Matz, another one, the guys who have been here for a long time, obviously have that experience, kind of lead the way in the sense of like, okay, who can round out a rotation and provide the innings you need to get through a season? Because as we saw last year and compared to the year before in 2023, innings are a huge thing for a rotation to provide. But I kind of like the way you phrase it of like, is there a chance for some, like, on somebody, Cardinals youth, in terms of the starting pitching prospect pipeline, for a chance to pierce the major league rotation? And I do think there is a window where that could happen, because as we've seen over the course of history of Major League Baseball and baseball in general, injuries happen to starting rotations. Innings are needed at the start at the major league level because starters, you know, it's a big workload to manage, and guys inevitably get called up. Guys make spot starts. Guys fill in when other people are unhealthy. I mean, we saw what Andre Pallante did. I mean, he's the youthful, you know, exuberance on that rotation at the moment. And he got there because there was an opening for injury, and he stuck because he was able to pitch and deliver. And I think, and I kind of thought about this after I had mentioned, you know, the Tim Kenson, the Cole Roby thing of, you know, of the kind of generation bloom. Mm-hmm. And those are guys who, you know, already on the 40-man, Quinn Matthews isn't, but even guys who are on the 40-man that kind of represent the youth in the Cardinal system, I need innings at, I think, in AAA. There are a lot of kind of still boxes to check for some of them, and I think Quinn Matthews is one of them. He had this marvelous year, right? I mean, it's fair to say that. Mm-hmm. I think first pitcher since Brandon Fott, I think, in 2012 or 2013. Yeah. First minor leaguer to strike out 200 or more batters in a season since him. And
was recently pitching for the NL champion, right, Arizona Diamondbacks against the – and he was a big part of their push.
And I think Quinn Matthews has the repertoire and the sort of mentality you look for as a starter to really make an impact in spring. But I mean, and then you look at what he did at the end of the season last year. I think that was something that he, since we're talking about youth, I guess I'll use a youthful term, that he felt pretty salty about. How he ended the year, I don't know how youthful that is, to be honest. No, he's salty.
But for the people twice your age, like myself, well, not twice your age, but what does salty mean?
Just bitter. Just left a kind of a bad taste in their mouth. Okay. After this,
all right. I didn't know if it meant something else because you're.
No, I don't know. I maybe there's a different. You know, it wasn't skibbity or something. I don't know what the kids say nowadays. But anyways, to get back.
Reference Ohio.
The end of the season for Quinn Matthews was kind of like pitching in Ohio, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
Where he had this phenomenal year. And, you know, there were some struggles because velocity dipped at the end of the year because he threw over 130 innings for the first time in his career after not pitching in minor league baseball the year before. I guess the long-winded response to this is I think there is a chance for guys like Quinn Matthews to crack the major league rotation and leave their fingerprints, leave their mark in that positional group. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there are kind of log jams for them to do that at the moment, and ones that could be cleared up just with the ebbs and flows of how a season goes,
or the trade during spring training.
Right. Yeah, I really do want to hear your thoughts, Derek, on this, because you've covered baseball for 2 decades now, and you've
not longer than that now,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's longer than that.
We were starting recording this podcast.
Yeah. Does this podcast count?
Yeah. For some reason, I had 2005 in my brain.
That's when I started covering the. Four is when I started covering the Cardinals.
That's what I'm thinking.
So this is my 21st. But I covered baseball for
the Cardinals.
All right. But I mean, I covered baseball since like the late 90s.
Even more. Yeah. So you've covered baseball for longer perhaps in Daniel's life. We're not going to reveal his age on the show here. But my point is I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
I don't want to get salty about it. But let's do a vibe check. Like, have I covered it longer? Let's just get a fact check here. Have I covered it longer than
I've been alive?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm 27.
Well, here we go.
What year was that? 97?
97.
So that was the year I graduated college. So I guess not technically. Okay. But I did cover Mizzou baseball. Yeah, I covered Mizzou baseball for as a beat.
Sure.
But like with the student newspaper in 94, for the daily paper, for the Columbia Daily Tribune in 95. So I guess technically.
So every minute this human being next to me has been breathing, you have been a journalist writing about baseball.
Well, yeah, in some fashion, either college, minor league, high school. One of my first things there in New Orleans was going out to an American Legion practice to see Mike Fontenot, future Cub, who was playing there, and Ryan Terrio was there. So, like, I saw those guys. I saw Mike Fontenot, who I believe was a sophomore at the time, and the football coach was trying to get him back to do kick returning. And I went out to watch him play baseball because I was told there's no chance they're risking his baseball career by having him return kicks on the football field. And I went out there going, okay, all right. Then I saw him play. I'm like, oh, my gosh, yes, I get it. The dude had left-handed pop that just stood out, like, for his age group. Anyway, so, yes, we have come to this is not one of the 10 questions, but we have resolved now that I am old. So congrats.
You've covered a few games over the years. So I want to hear your opinion on this. But because, yeah, surely, inevitably, even right now before spring training starts, you could argue that Michael McGreevy is on the cusp, if not ready to pitch in the major leagues as a starting pitcher. And maybe even Quinn Matthews. So let's say we find out in the next 3 or 4 weeks that they're ready to go. Well, you've got 7 starting pitchers now. Can they just say to Miles Michaelis, who makes like $287 million, hey, we're putting you in the bullpen?
No.
Because this is not how it works.
Well, so no, it's fine. I mean, it's not just because of how it works in baseball. Some of it is, right? Like, look, salaries dictate what they expect.
Right.
And not only what they expect, but what they need, right? Okay, that's kind of how salaries work. Like, let's just look in those terms. Like, when a team offers a player money, that is the biggest outward sign possible of, we think you're going to produce to this level. Maybe the Dodgers aren't doing that, but every other team in baseball is making an offer saying, we expect production to match this salary. Then the other side of that is, again, maybe the Dodgers don't fit this, but the team needs that back from you or close to it.
Right.
And I'll offer this part up to you, is that maybe that happens. Maybe Michaelis struggles. Maybe Michaelis repeats the last 2 seasons. And at some point in time, they're like, hey, man, this ain't working, and we're going to replace you. That does not happen in spring unless there's an injury. That probably doesn't happen in May. But certainly as you get closer to a team saying, we are way different, you make that call. Right.
Or that trade, like you kind of referred to.
Right. Like, or that trade.
And that's what I'm trying.
But you need those innings. This is like the last part.
Yeah, yeah.
You might need him to stomach some bad innings.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because a youthful lineup or a youthful bullpen, both of which the Cardinals will have, is going to have some turbulence.
Sure.
It's likely going to get rocky. And there might be the need to, on a Thursday against the Brewers, to have a starter who makes a lot of money just wear it.
Yeah.
So that the youth of the bullpen, so that the youth of the starting rotation elsewhere or whatever isn't rocked for 6 days.
And
like, it has a ripple effect.
Definitely.
If you don't have somebody who goes, yeah, all right, I get it. I'm paying a lot of money. I'm going to have to take this one because the team's going to be better for the next 5 days because I'm wearing the bad today.
And is that implying that if it was McGreevy instead of Michaelis,
they would pull him after 3 innings and it would be combustible bullpen and it would be transactions galore and it would be option here, DFA there, and lose this guy there. But you go, hey, Miles, look, man, you're getting paid quite a bit.
Right.
We need you to go 7.
Yeah.
You might give up 14.
Right.
You know, no, I'm not saying that that's going to happen.
Definitely what,
but, yeah, yeah. But, like, you need that. Like, we were just talking about this the other day, and it was same circumstance, far different situation for the team.
Okay.
But Edwin Jackson going out there and just wearing a bad game in 2011 meant the world to what happened next. Like, you could watch it unfold in real time and go, Edwin Jackson is doing what this team needs today so that it can be a contender tomorrow.
Sure.
It looks awful today.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, that's because they had Chris Carpenter and they team. It's way different when you look at this team and go, Miles Michaelis is wearing it today so that Miles McGreevy or Ryan Fernandez or Matthew Libertor or Zach Thompson isn't in AAA tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I love it.
Because they need a fresh arm.
Yeah, no, that's why I wanted to pick your brain and hear your expertise on that because, yeah, I mean, but and then it just comes back to, and maybe like, let's just talk this out. So it's the last week of the season, of the preseason, we call it exhibition season, Grapefruit League, and Michael McGreevy looks amazing. So now they have to make some decisions, right? Mm-hmm. Do you go to a 6-man rotation?
Yes.
That's it. You go.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And I'll say,
or they trade Mats during the season.
That was the other part is,
or Fetty. Yeah.
Right. And that's definitely something they will have to consider if you've got Michael McGreevy.
No, they're going to. They're open to that. I mean, as injuries happen, as teams like, I mean, I don't know what'll happen if the Cubs have an injury in their rotation, but as the Mets do, you know, the Houston does. I mean, there are teams out there that Atlanta needs a starter, like, to keep up. They need a starter. So does Fetty become that guy?
Right. No question. And that's what I'm trying to say is, like, back to the 500 at-bats that Nolan Arenado could take, how many starts will McGreevy not get with the St. Louis Cardinals if they keep the rotation as is?
Great question.
And will that slow his progress? And the whole point is that if this year is not about making the playoffs, it's about developing the young guys, wouldn't getting a young guy a lot of starts be a good part of that? Obviously acknowledging everything you said about if the innings get out of control and the team unravels and then – so you consider that as well.
All right. So let's have a quick answer to a quick question. Question number 6. J.J. Weatherholt is healthy, has his hamstring, is eager to show off that he can steal more bases. Mason Wynn says that was something that was missing from this most recent season, his rookie season. While he hit more home runs than he expected, he stole fewer bases. Victor Scott has the ability to steal bases in the big leagues that he didn't get a chance to show either because he wasn't on base or because of the circumstance. Cardinals playing from behind for a lot. So, quick answer to a fast question. Is this the year that the Cardinals finally rev up the running game? Because ever since they made larger bases, you know who's last in the NL Central in steals? The Cardinals. So, is this the year it finally happens?
I just don't think so. I think there are guys.
That's it, Daniel.
I know, but I mean, I'm saying this in the sense of, like, I just think that there are guys who do have those capabilities, right? I put Michael Ciolani into that bucket too. But I'm just saying in the sense of, like, when you're looking at the way the season could flow if they're playing from behind in games, because you mentioned the
great point.
With the young lineup, there's going to be turbulence, and if you're trying to scratch out wins, and you know what, maybe you have to turn to aggressiveness on the base paths, like, to manufacture runs.
Yeah, but that's cool. Or be exciting, dynamic. That's what Oliver Marmol's saying.
But I just feel like that because there's a little bit of an unproven certainty with just kind of the consistency in the lineup with some of the younger guys, that they're I just don't see them often running right out the gate. Maybe they hit their stride.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mid-season.
Yeah.
When guys kind of, if they find their flow and they find their footing and they're kind of grooving in that sense. But I just wouldn't expect, you know, a quick jump off the line.
Talking to Mason Wynn, though, at the winter warm-up, he reminded me, did he say he wants to steal, quote, 30, 40
bags?
And here's a guy who is improving as an on-base guy, so clearly he'll have more chances to steal more bases. And since he's the leadoff guy, and then you want to also think, like Derek made a reference to, if the Cardinals are, and Marmol keeps saying running, and I don't know if he means literally like running from first to second base, or if he more it means it more metaphorically, like we're going to have this mentality.
No, he means it. He means better base running, more steals. He calls it electric. I asked him, it's a great question because, I mean, it's a fair question because I asked him directly. I was like, hey, you keep using these terms. Is it right to interpret them as you mean a more dynamic running game? Not just steals, but first to third, first to home.
And there's great stats now these days that show which players are the best in baseball going from first to third. And I think they call them like extra bases. Like, I'm making the phrase up. It's the idea of like who steals a base while running from first to third. And so they'll have all this data too. And yeah, so here's hoping that they electrify, because the reality is you can tell by the way the Cardinals are selling tickets right now with flash sales and all these things. Opening day, no fees if you buy the ticket this month, this week, or whatever it is. Like, they're trying to get people in the ballpark, and it's going to be hard if the team's losing. But if you've got some people that remind the players of Vince Coleman and the running Redbirds, maybe that brings you down to the ballpark and otherwise.
All right, guys, I'm going to give you the name of – I picked six players – to answer this question. You can choose a wild card, but the question is there any room for surprises? You're welcome to choose one of these six players. You cannot both choose the same player who will be a surprise of spring, or you can come up with your own.
But what if your six are my six?
No, to pick one. Pick
right now.
No, that's what I'm saying. Pick one of the six.
We have six.
You can pick one of these six.
Oh, we can choose, So he came up with six. That's we get to choose.
I came up six. You get to choose one or go with wild card. But you can't both say the same guy. All right. They are Andre Ganilo, right-handed pitcher. Nick Anderson, right-handed pitcher, recently added. Jose Barrero, infielder, once the top prospect for the Cincinnati Reds. Bailey Horn, lefty, brought on through via waivers. Matt Svanson, a sneaky good closer for Double A Springfield. Roderick Munoz, claimed from the Marlins. He throws really hard. Who you got, gents?
Do you want to go first, or do you?
Well, I mean, can we add Thomas Sagesi on this?
Well, he's not much of a surprise.
Oh, you're saying
like that's what I'm asking. Okay, like maybe the answer the question is: are there any room for surprises? Benjamin says no.
Well, like I mean, a lot of those guys are relievers, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is we see it every year, right? It's a every year, every team, some guy you've never heard of or not the casual fan has never heard of
becomes almost like I rigged it that way.
Yeah. So you would have to think that one of those dudes is gonna emerge.
So who you got?
Is it pronounced Svanson?
Yeah, Matt Svanson.
Yeah, like, I'm going with Svanson. Yeah,
26 for 26, 27. 27 for 27, save opportunities. Goes off to the Arizona Fall League. A little clunky out there, but good experience,
strikeout
fun.
Rate was there, though, I think.
Strikeout rate was there. Great point.
Guys walked, too.
Yeah, that's
good. Also, and I remember talking to him over the offseason after the 40-man edition, and you know, he talked about having to develop a cutter in spring training and working through that pitch during the season because he knew he needed a third pitch, you know, kind of a sinker ball slider guy. But
good stuff.
While not having a third pitch and really trying to figure something out midseason was perfect in every save attempt for a Springfield team that was really good.
I don't know what to do here. You claim Svanson, but he explained why.
We're working together. We're teammates. Well,
yeah. All right, we're moving on.
Well, he can make his own pick also if he has one.
Right. And,
but he kind of explained your pick.
So I have to explain his pick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be good. Oh. Let's do that.
Let's see if I can. Who are you going with, Daniel?
Who do you want me to go with?
Go with Bailey Horn.
Bailey Horn, definitely.
If I'm going to make a pick, I mentioned him last spring a couple times as a guy who I think could really pop on the radar, but Andre Granillo.
Yeah.
When you look at just sort of like a traditional, or I don't know if traditional is the right way to
put it.
This
is his spring, man. I mean it. Like
a reliever with that 1-2, with the two pitches, that is a 1-2 punch that has a power fastball, that swing and miss slider. He hit a rough patch last year, I think in Memphis. And I mean, but he's been kind of up and down in Double A and Triple A, had that late inning role at both levels he's been at. But I mean, you look at strikeout rate, and I think the biggest thing, you look at swinging strike rate with him.
Yeah.
just his ability to miss bats, the velocity. I mean, mid 90s can touch 97.
Yeah.
I think, as I talked about last year, we just kind of didn't see him a whole lot during spring training, especially when games started up. I mean, but you look at a guy with some stuff that flashes, that kind of catches your attention, that really, I mean, like you mentioned, spring training, there's relievers that just pop up on the radar and find their role. And I Andre Garnillo, it really does feel like a candidate this year. In a year where, you know, it, like you mentioned before, there's going to be a young bullpen. And if you're looking at a young guy to crack that bullpen and really, you know, I imagine would work their way into innings later in the year. I mean, because we've seen the way the Cardinals kind of bring guys up in a bullpen and, you know, let them get their feet wet and then kind of, you know, have them earn their way into bigger spots. He's a guy who has kind of the stuff to do that.
Good call. Good call, which leads us into question number 8, which is really –
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and real quick, Nick, this Anderson thing is taking a chance on a guy who's got a
– I mean, he was the best reliever or one of the best relievers not too long ago.
Right, and that's what I was going to say. So
but not the same since elbow surgery.
Right. But if you feel like he's still got some of those talents and traits, you can bring it out of him. You got Dusty Blake's confident guy. Bring it out of him. It would be amazing. But Daniel brought up something today that I did not know while we were talking in the clubhouse. The kind of the trivia question.
Yeah. I hope it's right.
Assuming it's right, Daniel's got a – I didn't realize Nick Anderson's part in baseball history and maybe even in baseball lexicon, because a lot of people refer to the Blake Snell game, right?
Right.
People talk about all the time, oh, Blake Snell was pitching his butt off, and he gets pulled out of a playoff game with like 70-whatever pitches thrown or whatever it was. Well, who comes out of the bullpen?
Nick Anderson. Yeah, that's right. It was.
Kind of a little tidbit.
Not for Blake Snell?
Well, yeah,
I'm saying, but like...
Or Kevin Cash.
It's like, who was on...
So who's really having fun
I'm
here?
I'm having so much fun. Who was on deck for the Bobby Thompson home run, right? Willie Mays.
No, he had the signs. That's all I know. He knew what was coming. All right, 8... question is about the 8th inning. Who's your setup guy? What's the setup for closer? Big part of last year was them committing to a classic closer role with Ryan Helsley. There's no reason to go away from that. Let the guy go out, be the 9th inning, and then go make $100 million elsewhere. Get a draft pick for the Cardinals or something, or trade it July, whatever. But who's the setup for – who do you think wins it? One guy. Tell me, who do you think wins the setup job by the time we get into crunch time? Doesn't have to be spring, because it may be somebody who emerges during spring and takes the job later. Who you got?
I know he had some rockiness, but I'm just going with JoJo Romero.
All right, that's good. Yeah, he gets overlooked too much. So.
Yeah. What about you?
I mean, you look at the numbers that he had last year when he was JoJo, and you look at the holds, you look at the counting stats, you look at the...
Really good, yeah.
JoJo Romero could be that guy.
Yep.
And I think he will be that guy.
I would not discount Gordon Graceffo by the end of July. It's a wild card. All right, guys. We are to now the final two questions, and they're really related, and they're a good way to conclude. How do you expect the fans to – what are you guys looking for? What do you think? I mean, how are the fans going to react to this? You mentioned already the ticket boost, the ticket sales, the ticket attempts.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we going to see down here in spring training? I mean, it is increasingly harder and harder to know what the fans who come to see the team and what the fans who yell about on Twitter, where are they the same, where are they different?
Yeah.
We don't hear that on the field, but we do hear it from the anonymous guy with a keyboard. I just don't know.
Right.
So how do you expect the fans to react?
Yeah, and I've written this in my columns the past 2 days, the same theme of just the idea of the air quotes fun of being a fan in 2025 is going to be emotionally investing in an incomplete player as you watch him grow into who he can be with the St. Louis Cardinals. And you kind of like, you bet on him early and you hope that Jordan Walker can become an all-star or whoever you pick. And that's going to have to be kind of like the mind game you have to play if these dudes are indeed not going to be a B500 or whatever they are. And my dad is a perfect example. He's a St. Louis guy, follow the Cardinals, you know, since the womb type thing. He was saying that he is excited about this refresh. I mean, because it's like, all right, now they have a new direction. They have a direction they're going in. They're like, we're going to work on the minor leagues. We're going to invest money. New guys coming in. Like, so he, as one lone follower of baseball, is kind of excited about this. I also think he's in the minority. And those ticket things are making me think that, like, no one's going to be going to games even in the first month of the season.
We might see that in spring training. One barometer of how popular the Cardinals are and how robust the commitment of the fan base has been through the years is the attendance for when the Cardinals are the visiting team at Roger Dean Stadium. So that's when the Marlins have the ticket, and the Marlins don't have the same kind of fan support. Mm-hmm. So you look to that and go, well, how much did Cardinal fans grab onto those available tickets to go to those games? And those started to drift last year. And we'll see if those start dipping into the twos, right? Then you'll start knowing, like, gosh, there's not a whole lot of enthusiasm for this team. What will you look for, Daniel?
I think the distinction that you made that was important is the fans that show up to Busch. Well, I mean, they're fans that show up to Busch and the fans are online. But the more vocal ones who you kind of, right, when you said anonymous photo, random name, bunch of numbers, account, saying whatever. But I think trying to gauge fan response and how things could look, I would honestly imagine that there would be some excitement at the beginning of the year because it's opening day and it's people are excited to get back outside.
You red know, jackets and Clydesdales.
Right, right. But even like opening week, the first couple, there's baseball's always
American League teams in town for the big showdown.
87 rematch.
Yeah.
And then the Albert Pujols Bowl a few days later. Yeah. Or the David Freese Bowl, Fernando Salas Bowl.
No, the Daniel Guerrero Bowl.
Whatever Halo Cardinal, you know, tie you want to bring in. Isringhausen Bowl. We'll call it that.
No, I'm going with Doug DeCinzo.
Troy Percival Adam Kennedy Bowl.
Right. The Troy Glott. Wait, Troy Glott.
No, you know what we're missing? It's the Jim Edmonds.
Oh,
it's the Jim Edmonds Bowl.
Right.
It is the Edmonds Bowl. Right. Both teams will be
chaos. It'll be chaos.
Oh, my God. Both teams will invite him back, and he won't know what to do.
But
he won't tell us about it.
I think there will be the natural excitement of a baseball season to start the year. But I do think that, and I think, Benjamin, you use your dad as an example, and I think that is kind of it's a good example, right? Because I think there are diehards out there who will, whether they like it or not, the reset and the direction, but I think those are the people that will show up at the ballpark and you will see those Cardinals fans. I think, being a diehard or being a casual, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's all, you know, it's just baseball. It's fun, you know, whether you watch 162 or you watch one of 162. And I mean, especially coming from, and I guess I'll just use my personal background, coming from Southern California, where there is a really good team who have diehards and casuals who are spending a lot of money to go and watch this juggernaut of a franchise.
The Padres?
No, the
LA Kings.
Right.
Oh, yeah. The Lakers with, yeah.
And then you have another.
I heard the Dodgers recently traded for, like, the best player the Mavericks had. Is that true?
No. Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah.
That was Angel City FC.
Okay, got it.
And then you have a team, the county next to them, that also plays Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
That, I guess that's kind of all they do now, right? But
they don't make the playoffs. That's something
they don't.
That's something they don't do.
Yeah,
right.
They have one of the best players.
Yeah. Right. But you have sort of the more casual sense because there's a lot of confusion with kind of what the state of the team is right now.
Yeah.
And an aging star who, you know, everybody's hopeful for to bounce back. But I think in a sense, I'm just saying, like, I think when it comes to fan turnout, I mean, I would probably expect a lot less Cardinals fans at Busch Stadium this year, only because there will be the diehard fans who, and the fans who want to go outside and, you know, kind of experience life and go to the ballpark, and the fans who will say, well, what's the point of going now? Because I know they're not going to be, or they're not trying to be competitive. And maybe that changes if this team does what they believe they can do and really shock a lot of people and shock.
That's the word they were using.
You know, kind of shock projections. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if we're kind of expecting this, okay, up and down season, in a reset year, I mean, I wouldn't expect a whole lot of, you know, rah-rah from Cardinals fan base from, you know, a lot of people who, you know, just kind of are casual fans and go to the ballpark when they kind of feel like it and don't feel the need to be there for, you know, all 81.
Yeah. Dan Farrell, the old president.
Retired.
It's old makes it sound like the yeah.
Old makes it sound like he's been covering the baseball since the 1990s. We've already established this.
The long time, now retired president, who used to be the old president, now he's not, Dan Farrell, the great man, innovative thinker, the whole thing. He would talk a lot about the idea of Cardinals as Midwestern tourism, and just like Anaheim and your area has Disney, what is it, Land?
Right, Land. It's and then land,
Disney okay. World in Orlando.
Maybe. And Knott's Berry's Farm.
Yeah, yeah. People literally, their destination in the Midwest of America is to Ballpark Village. And I'm curious. So what made me think of even bringing this up was when you were saying, like, the fans that just go. It's true. Like, there are plenty of fans that would go see a Cardinal game regardless of the record, because they're not going for the nine innings. They're going for the beer and the sunshine and their buddies and the music and all that.
Yeah, they're
going
to lean into that. That's what the Cardinals are about to do with their ballpark experience, is they're about to sell being at the ballpark with the ballpark as the soundtrack to singles night or the soundtrack to a first date or whatever. Yeah. That's going to be part of it. All right, we're going to spend a lot of this season for the Cardinals and a lot of this 13th season for the best podcast in baseball exploring question number 10. Okay. So we have all summer to talk about this. I just want you guys to distill this down as we bring this to a close. The question is, can the Cardinals begin their way back? Obviously, it's a play on Cardinal way. What do you want to see? What do you need to see in spring training that suggests that the Cardinals actually do have a direction, that they actually do know they got their GPS set, and they may have been lost a bit in the woods for a bit. They may have been chasing a championship, chasing things to do for a while, and just got lost. But what do you need to see this spring that suggests the Cardinals have a compass and know their magnetic north to be a contender again?
It's a good question. I find it a tricky one to answer because spring is a finite amount of time and the games don't count. But I think right away, I keep bringing up Walker and Gorman. If those guys, if Gorman doesn't strike out as much as he did last season, and if Walker doesn't ground out a bunch in these Grapefruit League games, suddenly it's like, all right, we're heading into the season with two guys we think have all-star potential that are actually fixed, or they have worked and improved to fix their flaw. That's some optimism. And then because then you're excited about Contreras, you're excited about Sonny Gray, some of these guys that you know are going to be pretty good. So I guess maybe that's the only thing that comes to mind, is like if Nolan Gorman's striking out just like he always had, it's like, oh my gosh, like this could be a long season and thus a long reset.
Can I take a different approach to this?
Yeah, of course.
And you can stop me if this all just sounds like...
Do you think one of us would actually stop you?
Yeah, I think so.
Why would we stop you?
Well, you guys don't like me.
It's not true.
I think when it comes to Cardinals find their way back, I'm also looking at it in a sense of, can this farm system find their way back? Mm-hmm. Because I think when people have talked about the Cardinal way and they talked about what makes the St. Louis Cardinals the St. Louis Cardinals, heard it's a draft and develop, it's the in-house talent, it's the guy that starts in Palm Beach and works their way up to Memphis and is, you know, handed a major league number when they get to Busch Stadium for the first time.
Or the guy from some random college like Slippery Rock who gets overlooked by other teams, but the Cardinals identify Matt Adams as a possible player, then ends up helping the team too.
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, right. And I think... No. And that's good that you acknowledge that, just because I didn't really think of it in that sense as well. But I think in terms of the Cardinals finding their way, a lot of it, and when we talk about this reset and this overhaul, I think a lot of it has to do with the farm system and seeing how far they've fallen.
Yeah, fair.
Seeing how much they've added in terms of staff, in terms of coordinators. And I think a big part of that is going to be with some of the outside people they brought in, right? Because the Cardinals have promoted from within and kind of shared this philosophy. Now you have people like Larry Day is an example of somebody who's brought in as a farm director, who spent his entire baseball, professional baseball career within the Cleveland Guardians system, but comes in with this kind of foundational knowledge of what the Cardinals' history is in terms of a player development, and shares the same vision that everybody else in the organization has of how do they get back to that. And I think that when it comes to the Cardinals finding their way in fostering this, not just like reset year for 26-27, but reset year for, I don't know, 36-37, who knows? I mean, but I think that what player development does this year in helping guys, not everybody's going to break that prospect ceiling, but helping guys get to that next level in terms of their development, in terms of just actually getting to the next level of minor league baseball and succeeding, because we've seen guys stall in the last few years. But I think kind of this fresh look at the farm system and seeing kind of what they're doing in terms of providing players with the resources to develop into big league, productive big leaguers, I think that to me is going to be one of the bigger indicators of will the Cardinals eventually find their way back.
This is what I'm looking for. This is my 21st spring training here, and I'm going to dive in the Wayback Machine to something that Tony La Russa told me very early on when talking about spring. He liked to talk about spring. I liked to talk about baseball. I learned a lot from being just around. It was completely different kind of setup than, say, a post-COVID security restrictive spring training. But one of the things he told me was, if you see players standing around, I have made a mistake with the schedule. I would watch. I would encourage you all to watch. I would encourage fans to watch. Do the Cardinals have a kinetic spring? They want to create a youthful, exuberant energy. They want to expand a staff. They want to change the feel of player development. And if players feel that they are getting better, those are excited players. There are no standings, as you mentioned, in spring. So there is no reason to be frustrated or to be dour or to be disenchanted or to be any of the things where you're like, gosh, things aren't going right, unless you don't feel you're improving, unless you don't feel you're getting attention. So watch for that. The Cardinals have expanded their staff. There should be. We've seen times here recently, something we brought up, where players had no one to work with because they downsized the staff. That shouldn't be the case. Players should not be standing around. There should be action. If it's a kinetic spring, that is a sign that it's a development spring, because they're excited about the interaction they're having with peers, the interaction they're having with coaches, the interaction they're having with the schedule, and the progress they're making as players. If this is a dull spring, the Cardinals are going in the wrong direction.
The buoyant birds.
Yeah. Buoyant birds. You want the radiance of Cardinals, right? That's what the group of Cardinals is called, right?
Like, oh, that's fun. I didn't even know that was the answer.
Yeah, radiance of Cardinals, like, you know, like a murder of crows.
It's a flock of birds.
Yeah.
Right? But then if it's like, if it was Cardinals and Orioles, I'm not talking about the ballpark, I'm talking about birds flying. Yeah. But if it was just Cardinals flying, it would be a radiance?
Yeah, a radiance of, like, you've heard all these phrases. Yeah, it's a radiance of Cardinals.
I just didn't know radiance was the one for Cardinals.
Yeah, radiance of Cardinals. There you go. It took us an hour and 10 minutes, but we got to something to where I could offer something new. Gentlemen, thank you so much. That, of course, is Benjamin Hockman, sports columnist at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and Daniel Guerrero, my trusted sidekick this year as a baseball writer at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
That's right.
I'm excited to have you aboard in the new role. Got promoted.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Very cool, Daniel. Congrats on your promotion. You're the number 2 baseball writer at the Post-Dispatch.
I got promoted?
You did, yeah.
What's the first time?
No, we just were going to tell you this. Yeah, congrats.
Thank you.
No, we're all very happy for you. You can find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage coverage from Daniel, more constant and cardinal than ever from Daniel, there at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in the pages of the paper and at stltoday.com. Of course, you can find 10 Hockman there, the video that Benjamin does daily. You can find our video reports. And, of course, you can find the best podcast in baseball. You can get it also wherever you get your podcast, the best podcast in baseball, brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Gentlemen, thank you so much for helping me start the 13th season of this thing. Hard to believe.
Baker's dozen for you, man. Congrats. Yeah.
Lucan Baker has to be a guest, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. You're the man.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high-quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.